This is the Climb to Space.
Hello and welcome to the Decline to State Internet Radio Stream, the show which we get together to discuss the ups and downs of life outside the Matrix. Decline to State is proud to bring you with a surprisingly few netcasts in which the hosts do not support acts of aggression against you. You can find us on the web at declinefm.com, where you will find a link to the live chat. The live chat is your go-to way to interact with other listeners or bring up points for discussion on the show. If you've gotten sick of the back-to-back high-profile interviews, you are in luck. We are... Tonight, we have some original DTS content straight from our brain to yours. Archive episodes can be found not only on Decline FM, but also under Decline Estate on iTunes. I'm Ronald McPaul, your beacon of freedom in the heart of the Silicon Valley, and I'm joined by my handsome co-casters, and I'll let them go around the horn and introduce themselves.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Eternal.
And this is Toasty Time, and I can pick up right there. So the past couple of weeks, as Ron said, we've had some awesome guests. We had David Friedman. I think before that we had Tom Woods, which was one of my favorite shows. But
we had Larkin Rose on last week too.
Oh yeah, Larkin Rose. How could I forget him? So when we don't actually have one of these really severely awesome guests on, we want to make the show actually really useful to you guys. And so I want to talk about something that I've been going through and having a serious bout of, and that is...
And Toast, before you do the big reveal, I like this dramatic intensity. I wanted to recap kind of where Decline to State has been, because it's actually kind of nice having a breath without... You know, without these high profile guests that we're so spoiled to have.
We need a montage, but we don't have a montage.
Well,
Gonna need a montage.
It's when you have to show a lot of stuff and you don't have enough time. But what have we done? We've gotten to meet and hear from people who would otherwise just be a long list of names on a bulletin board. We've talked about what it was like to first see the state for what it really is. We've talked about persevering in a sea of people who are sure you're politically active and part of Occupy Wall Street way on the left. We've talked about trudging through a jungle of people who know you are literally Bill O'Reilly on the far right. And then we've talked about logic, communication skills, relating to all types of other people. And we have talked about even like feeling like you're crazy. But gloriously, we kept going until we got to meet some of the most iconic, most influential people on subjects such as economics, philosophy, and voluntary interactions. But tonight, on Decline to State, we're going to be a bunch of downers. We're going to talk about something that a lot of you veterans out there are going to be familiar with, and some of the newbies might want to look out for. Toast, it was on the tip of your tongue. I'll let you say it.
It's burnout. You know, we all get really tired of it, and being an activist of sorts, or radio star for liberty, it has its high moments. You get to talk to some of the greatest people in the world, in my opinion, but sometimes you get the feeling that you're not being particularly effective at what you're doing. I think everybody who regards themselves as a libertarian has gone through this. You know, you have your family members. Your family members kind of laugh you off, he's just young. It's very thankless. You go through all this research, you learn economics, you're in school for economics if you're like some of the casters we have on this show, and you bring forth these arguments to people, and they don't listen to you. It doesn't matter what you say, it doesn't matter that you use the logic, it doesn't matter because they just have this feeling you're wrong. It's thankless. You go through all this every day, on and on, and my own experience is that I have personally been very... Well, no, I shouldn't say very, because comparatively, maybe not so much, but I haven't met my goals of spreading my personal bubble of liberty outside just my own group of friends, and that's really disappointing, and I'm experiencing some pretty strong burnout as a result.
It's hard to face it, because for me, I've run into so many different facets and aspects of the community and the ideas that are interesting. There's the intellectual side, there's reaching out to people, there's communication skills, promoting it, like you said, Toast. There's kind of a thrill of first introducing people that have never come across these ideas to them. You look at you cockeyed. But then after a while, you know, these strange looks can wear on you, and I'm sure your mood and, you know, whatever your state of mind and how busy you are with the rest of your life depends on it. But it's almost like it loses its joy or its thrill after a while, and you think to yourself, you know, I'm with you too. Sometimes you're like, why is this a big part of my life? Should this be? It can be tough.
You know, I think a lot of libertarians kind of feed off of that being that contrarian, being the person who's different, who has the unique political beliefs, and they just enjoy being, you're that guy at parties who knows all of those facts. And you know so much better than the other people, and you just like blow their minds, and they don't want to go into an argument with you because you're so well read.
Yeah, and once you establish yourself as a badass, and you piss your family off, and people don't want to talk to you about those things, and you just have this little aura around you, and what next?
Oh, that is the question, isn't it?
It's more than just that. I think a lot of it is you tire other people out. Like the fact that they feel that, you know, maybe rightfully so, maybe not so, that their opinions don't hold as much, they don't hold weight to you. Those of us in the liberty movement, we take a lot of time to analyze our beliefs, to go through philosophical arguments, to look at evidence. We really feel like we pour a lot of time and effort into coming to our opinions. And a lot of people, you know, may not see that or understand that. So when we are extremely, I guess, stalwart in our defense of them and extremely adamant to try to get other people to come to our side of the argument, it's extremely difficult for people to deal with that day in and day out, especially, you know, people who see us all the time, you know, family, close friends and stuff. And if they're not open to it initially, if they're not moving forward, they get really tired of it. And then they try to change the topics and they don't want to, you know, they just repeat the same things over and over again. And it's more of a ritual than it is an actual debate or a conversation. I think that can feel for us extremely frustrating because it's as if they don't respect all that time and energy we put into coming to our position in the first place.
Oh, I would go further than it's as if they didn't care. I think they, in fact, do not. As disheartening as that really sounds, in my own experience as sort of a young person fresh out of college, you know, I'm still with my parents right now, as unfortunate as that is. And the experience is very, it's very devaluing. I mean, you hear all the time things straight up like, oh, I just don't want to have this conversation, which translates into, I have no respect for the effort you've put into this. I'm not interested in the things you're interested in, don't want to be.
I'm with you, Toast. I was home for the holidays.
Oh, yeah. The holiday season just happened. Of course.
Yeah, we're all there. I mean, I've had even siblings I'm close with be like, okay, you know, we know you. Do you like to talk about X thing? And you do the podcast, and you know, I'm on Reddit too. But you don't need to talk about it all the time. It's like not real. It's not part of everyday life. And to an extent, I mean, I get what they're talking about, but also like you're saying, it can be Toast. It's frustrating too. It is devaluing. I would agree with that statement. I'm curious what Eternal thinks.
Let me think for a second. I guess the thing that comes to mind the most is that when we go and put forth a lot of these arguments and really put a lot of effort into approaching people and putting forth our best face and our best arguments, and they toss them aside, it's easy to fall into, and this happens to me a lot, it really does, and I apologize for people who get affected and exposed to the stupidity that comes out of my mouth when I'm suffering from it, which is just intellectual laziness and just a lot of almost vitriolic arguments like, you're stupid, why don't you get this? Or, you know, just, I don't want to have this huge conversation where I'm debunking fallacy after fallacy, so you're just a troll and not worth my time kind of thing. And it's very easy to get sucked into that. And I think it's especially easy to do on the internet as opposed to in real life. But it's easy to do in real life too, where you just dismiss people as you're just choosing to be ignorant. And I don't even want to bother anymore.
I mean, in a sense, and we all came from Reddit. I think we're all posters on some of the Liberty forums on Reddit, and that's just there are just an endless number of bad relationships you can have with people on Reddit, right? You can debunk people's arguments as often as Rutto does. There's an endless supply of statists on Reddit, right? And these are people that don't want to listen to your argument. for the most part. I mean, I'm generalizing, of course. You can reach people that do.
But. You can reach people occasionally, and it is vindicating when that happens, but I guess the ratio is not good enough sometimes, and I think, especially right now, it feels very frustrating. Just because I feel like the longer things are around Reddit being one of those communities, the more statist and mainstream and like closed-minded they become. It's just part of the social community experience. I don't know why it is, but things usually start off more open, they become more closed over time.
Yeah, well, it's true.
I feel like Reddit's gone that way.
I mean, in regards to posting online, and the truth is, that's kind of part of libertarian culture right now. I mean, you find libertarians on college campuses or whatever, and in my experience, everybody, maybe they were members of like the Ron Paul forums or something. And I think that's actually, I want to mention Ron Paul later in regards to burnout, because, well, I sort of expect that to occur for a lot of Ron Paul supporters after he lost the election. But they were members of Ron Paul forums, or a lot of Redditors, of course, some Mises forum types. It's just ingrained into the libertarian culture. And it just seems like what that actually means is that because the forum environment is the same everywhere, it seems like bashing your head against a brick wall, no matter where you are. And maybe that's my experience being on Reddit, because Reddit is especially that way. It seems like actually bashing your head against the wall is just this libertarian culture. It's that culture of intellectualism for the sake of itself. And that's something that I personally have lost. Like, I don't want to go and read the entirety of Man, Economy, and State just to be a more learned person.
Right.
So, it's a personality thing. So I'm just going to go out there and say, you know, there are people, libertarianism in general is associated with the, I guess, rational temperament of people is one way, you know, it's sometimes referred to as terrible psychological classifications, but the quote-unquote rational temperament corresponding to, I guess, what is it, like NT type Myers-Briggs, I don't really care too much about that stuff, but there's a certain group of people that tend to think very organized and structurally and logically and like to create architectures, you know, and structures mentally. Those types of people are attracted to libertarianism more than other groups naturally. That's
engineers.
Yeah, engineers, physicists, some mathematicians. You know, there's a lot of that. So you're going to get very structured people in the liberty movement that are, and a lot of those, a subset of those are going to be the types that seek knowledge for the sake of seeking knowledge. Like, they're just totally cool with that. And then there's going to be the types, which I guess you and I, Toast, are probably falling to that type, which is the people that like to seek knowledge so that we can go and do something with it. And I feel like the movement may be dominated primarily by the former type rather than the latter type to an extent. And that, historically at least, and that's why it's been the way it has been, where people are completely complacent, just being in their own little world and writing their own treatises and stuff, and which is great. It creates great resources, but at this point, I think there's enough resources. I really do. So
yeah,
the question is the next step, and need different types of people involved.
And so what I was working on for a long time was communicating with people. I guess we had a couple shows actually literally based around communication, such like that, which was, I guess that was part of my own process of just figuring out how to communicate with people. And I guess my personal experiences didn't reflect success in communicating.
It's hard. It's really hard because the one thing I've discovered, and this is something I think the liberty movement in general, libertarians need to learn this. They have to learn. If you're going to get one thing out of this podcast, maybe this might be the most important thing. There is no magic argument. There's no one argument that's going to convince everybody. You can't do it. Everybody has their own particular thoughts, needs, desires, fears, and you're just not going to be able to shove one argument out there and everybody's going to flock to you like, you know, a bunch of birds to, you know, that guy in the Alfred Hitchcock movie. I think it was called Feathered Creatures. Yeah.
that's really funny, because I was just going to ask you guys the same thing. If starting out or learning the logic and learning the philosophy of the field or the area, you guys thought that there was going to be something at the end of the yellow brick road, there was going to be a magic argument, like you said. I mean, you think that, you know, there's a way to present things logically in just the right way, and then you realize that these people, or not these people, I mean, this is kind of sounding condescending at this point, but people will generally assume that you're not doing things logically. And like you guys said, I don't think they're giving you credit for all that hard work that you've done, you feel and you know that you've done, but they see you as being, you know, part of a group of people and you're just kind of showing your allegiance and waving your flag. But it's kind of tear-jerking to think, no, I earned this, I worked for this, I want to share this, and now I'm burnout.
Yeah, I mean, they're not wrong in assuming that people do that, because that's what everybody else does. Nearly everybody else. I mean, I'll go out there and say there are some leftists that are well-read, fine, but your average American voter is not one of these people. And so, in a sense, they are right in assuming that, oh, you just came to these beliefs because you just decided you like something. Maybe you just really, really like low taxes. Maybe they think that's like all you are, because that's all they are.
Yeah. No, and it's I get the frustration, and I can see, you know, we're kind of holding back as we talk about this issue, kind of wanting to speak about people in an accusatory tone or accuse them of being lazy, or it's like we want to feel a little vengeful or vent that. And it's probably not productive to direct it at people who, you know, don't really perceive us or don't get us, much as we may try, as much as we spend all this time communicating and learning how to. But, you know, certainly the frustration is there, and it's something that, you know, I think a lot of people can sympathize, which is kind of makes it a bummer of a topic, but still a good one nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, something in particular I've been frustrated at recently is just, well, not maybe that I should be faulting other people for it, but just in general that I get frustrated personally. And it is something that I work through myself. I get frustrated personally when people come to the right conclusions through really not sound means. I mean, here's a really crude example of that might be, like, you know, Republicans wanting low taxes. I mean, as though they, like, really want that. No. But their reason for it isn't that, like, it's completely immoral to take taxes.
Laffer curve.
Yeah, I don't know. They just, like, kind of maybe they want lower taxes for themselves, but it's hard to pin down because they don't actually have a firm basis for it.
Lower taxes are better for growth, not taking people's money against their will is wrong.
Right. It's to keep the wheels turning, to be a first-class nation, to have American exceptionalism, if we're going to pick a target.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, man. The real problem is that when you do that, when you put forth the conclusions and then have an incorrect backing for them, you're conceding a huge part of the argument, which shouldn't be conceded. And then when you take that argument and you apply it to different things, then it yields some really stupid conclusions sometimes. And then you end up arguing over, oh, well, it doesn't apply here, or that, you know, maybe you have to tweak it slightly. And you don't have a good philosophical conversation. What you really have is just the quibbling over and nitpicky nonsense.
Oh, and while we're on this particular rant, it also concedes sort of extremely slow gradualism. I know, like, Rothbard spoke on this a lot. I remember reading some particular Mises Daily written by him about it, that just that these arguments that don't concede the morality of taxation tend to mean that a good politician can be one that decreases taxes by just a couple percent, you know, like at a time, very, very, very gradually, whatever. And that's not so related to this show. That was just a particular rant.
I remember running across, like, I ran across a guy just like today or yesterday who was talking to gradualism, and I love what Stefan Molyneux does to people who promote gradualism or pragmatism. And he's like, okay, well, if a woman is being beaten by her husband, should she sit down with him and try to work out maybe reducing the beatings by about 5% over the next 5 years? Or should she say, maybe we shouldn't be beating each other? That kind of thing. I mean, it's
5-year plan?
Yeah, the 5-year plan.
Oh, maybe if you put 888 or something like Herman Cain, then we'd have something.
9% less beatings.
Or 999.
Yeah.
But 9%. We're fast approaching the beating cliff.
But oh, I get what you guys are talking about, though. It's seeing where people are on the path and wanting to speed them up, or or even worse, thinking that, oh, they're never going to get quote unquote there, you know, they're helpless, and seeing that is kind of frustrating too. It's like, what am I to do? I don't feel useful. I don't feel like, you know, not that this is my responsibility per se, but it's something that I'm passionate about, something that I'm proud of.
Right.
I just want them to stop robbing me. I feel like that. I
mean, well, there's that.
I think that's what it comes down to, is we just want to be left alone.
I mean,
we
that's the ultimate goal.
Pay for all this.
I mean, ultimately, we want to live in a voluntary society, or at least have like a group of people around ourselves and surround ourselves with voluntarists. That's, for a lot of us, that's the ultimate goal.
I don't think it's that hard, too. I think it's as simple as, like, if we just stop being forced to pay for the state of society, building the voluntary society will be easy. That's the easy part. Like, just let us keep our money, and then we're good to go. Don't point guns at us for no reason. Let us keep our money, and we will leave you guys alone to your status hellholes that go ahead and have fun with your North Korea style dictatorship. I don't care.
And it sounds like such a simple, easy request, and in a way it is, but then it seems like it's always just out of arm's reach, like ludicrously so too, right. Which is
I mean, ultimately, most of the like concerns I'm going to be bringing up today, tonight, are actually just sort of spin-offs of I am not meeting my goals, right? But to work off of what you said before and actually wrap it into the general concept of burnout, what you said before, Ron, about how just sort of the concerns of people maybe choosing the wrong path to the conclusions that I've reached or whatever, my concerns with that are twofold. The first is that I guess there's this fear that like if you choose the wrong basis for your beliefs, you might just go off believing something really strange. I mean, I think the example that comes to mind is sort of what Rothbard said on children is very much I don't want to make an intellectual argument for or against it, whatever, but it's very different from what a lot of volunteers currently believe. And so I have personal concerns with that. So, you know, I have this inner concern that, okay, these people are going to eventually just come to very wrong conclusions. I'm eventually going to have to separate myself from them intellectually, label myself differently. I mean, our very own Rutto made an entirely new Reddit about the whole child, the corporal punishment issue.
No spanking kids. Yeah, that is a huge rift in the ANCAP community. Volunteers couldn't decide whether like spanking kids was good or bad or something. And it's like, that's one issue.
And you know why it happened is exactly that. It's that they use different bases for developing their moral conclusions.
Not to mention, it's just there's some psychological things going on there too, where people are probably trying to justify certain things.
Right. I guess that's like that's the against all Archon side of the argument, isn't it? Let's not get into that. I think the other problem is extremely personal for me, that especially once these beliefs start branching out, like, okay, so then there are these alternate communities. Some believe in corporal punishment, some do not. I feel like, in a sense, I have to align myself with one of them because I have to personally believe something. And, like, in general, I am motivated by morality. I stop wanting to align myself and work for the other people who identify themselves as anarcho-capitalists. That I know this is sort of a collectivist argument, but when you argue things on the internet, for example, and you label yourself maybe as a voluntarist or anarcho-capitalist.
My radio cult member. Whatever player I use on the red. Never mind.
One of the things that always motivated me was just sort of being an anarcho-capitalist, showing up at Students for Liberty events and meeting tons of other ANCAPs and voluntarists there. And it's that additional sort of factor of working for the world those people, my friends, want to build. Working towards that is very motivating for me. And I lose that very quickly when I see all of these divides happening.
I think it's a natural tendency for human beings to want to kind of segregate themselves into tribes, and as it were, you know, to find new labels of themselves, create communities around themselves of people that are as like-minded as possible. It's a natural thing, and it's really hard, really, 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 really hard for people to fight that temptation, because it's probably evolutionary. It's probably just built into us because we are tribal, you know, organisms. That's the way we work. That's the way our social structures have worked for millions of years, and back when we're apes, basically.
Oh, yeah. Now, be careful, though, because I was careful. I actually didn't ever phrase it as being a member of a tribe as motivating me. I was pretty careful to mention that my actual motivation motivation was that I have a lot of friends out there and people who also want a voluntary society, and working sort of for the benefit of my friends, people I deeply care about, is much more motivating than just being an American or a voluntarist, whatever label you want to put on. I'm not working for that label.
Yeah, it's too far out. It's too abstract. It doesn't make sense to use that as a goal in the near or short term. It's just, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me, at least.
Yeah, I would tend to agree.
And sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I didn't want to be accused of being a collectivist here.
No. That's the other thing. It's hard. This is something just on that segue. It's hard to talk about communities and groups and social structures and also be an individualist at the same time, because they are a little bit self-contradictory. They are two separate ideas, which can both be true at the same time. Like, I can be part of a community but be, you know, an individualist. It's just hard to make those arguments and make them clear and defined and not confuse people. So I understand, you know, if when we go and say things like, well, X and X group has position, you know, Y and that kind of stuff, it's really hard to avoid sounding collectivist, because it's the way our language is set up, I guess. I don't really know.
I was going to ask you guys real quick, if you guys feel like part of that impulse or that feeling that you need to collectivize comes from, you know, the statist paradigm we find ourselves in, where you have to accumulate enough people in one camp, in, you know, in one mentality to, you know, to get enough votes for that to be big. I mean, to be heard, you have to fit into one or two, you know, one of two or three huge categories. So
I don't think it's that. I think it actually comes from the family, to be honest, because we all are part of, I mean, except unless you're Batman, you're part of a collective when you grow up. You're part of a family. I mean, families are the small communist unit, the collectivist unit that you are part of. It's not really communist, like fascists or something, but it depends on what kind of family you grow up in, obviously. But the family is the mini state, basically. And as a kid, you get used to the family makes the decision, which is a proxy for the head of the household makes the decision. It's really rare that the family unanimously makes the decision until, you know, maybe when you're much older or something, and then everybody can go on off, do their own things. But when you're younger, it's not like the family decides what's for dinner. It's the parents decide what's for dinner and eat your greens, or you don't get dessert.
I mean, I think the family is that's a very broad and extremely difficult issue. Man, I didn't concede that I was collectivizing. I think it's just natural. I just want good things to happen to my friends. The people I choose to be my friends are those who generally want voluntary relationships.
Well, families can be a good thing. I mean, I'm not saying that families are a bad thing. It's more like families are, like, we are born into social groups. We are naturally social. It's something that some people in the liberty movement seem to forget that from time to time. I don't know if you've encountered it, but, you know, sometimes you have to be reminded that, yeah, there are social structures, and yeah, they're not necessarily, you'll pop out of the womb and suddenly you're a big, strong Ayn Rand who don't need no people.
Yeah.
So I guess the big argument I'm just trying to make is that when we put forth, you know, different groupings and stuff, it's not contradictory to the individualist thing, and it's a perfectly fine way to look at things, as long as those are not, I guess, what we call archon relationships.
Yeah, I'm with that. So rather than, you know, and this could be a positive way too to kind of help people out of the slump maybe of burnout, but, you know, you kind of address that, you know, logical inconsistency or potential one that, you know, how can you be an individual but also part of a group? And you can be an individual to the extent that you're unique and different than everybody else, like everybody else is, but you are able to interact with the people around you in that group. And that's what makes you part of that group. You don't need to be the same as them, but you can get along with them in a way that, you know, has mutual benefit and all that stuff without using violence, hopefully.
Oh, well, and, sure. I mean, you're going to form groups with the things that you do. It's interesting. Most of the libertarian-ish groups that I guess we involve ourselves in particular on Reddit, those tend to be like libertarianism as a hobby. Like, just following the tyranny of today is sort of, it's a sort of...
Well, we follow it like some people follow sports, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You guys are so right.
It's like following hockey for the fights.
Yeah, you can't look away because it's just
it's or even better, just like anecdote. But I found myself, someone posted something, which was like a video of some guy. I remember what I think it was, a football injury, and his like leg got broken or something. And then people, of course, naturally flock like vultures to a rotting corpse, and they post tons of different sports injuries. And I just found myself clicking on all of them. I was like, oh, these are all like, why am I watching this? But I couldn't stop. It was like it's like really. God, it's like, have you ever seen that Simpsons episode, Tamacco?
Oh, yeah.
Tomatoes that are actually full of tobacco. They taste terrible, but you can't stop eating them. It's just so addictive. It's like that.
It's like fail blog or something.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's popular. But the point is more, we're going to associate ourselves with people that do the same things as us. Where we, like many other libertarians, can't look away when the state runs itself into a ditch or whatever. Following that media is actually a hobby for a lot of these people, so we associate ourselves with those people.
Going for Simpsons reference number two, we're kind of like Nelson, who just shows up on the sidelines when the state screws up and goes, ha!
Yeah, sure, why not?
That's my voice like cracked in the middle of that, so that's impressive.
Well, don't be too hard on yourself.
I'm kind of sick, so I'm blaming it on that.
Right, so everybody's sick right now. But regardless, the point is that it's not so bad to associate yourself with people that do the same things. I mean, I associate with other people that play the same video games as me, with people that have the same or similar careers to me, right? It's not that associating yourself with a particular group isn't by itself collectivist, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the important thing is that as libertarians, it's very easy to go and see ourselves as, you know, individually independent people and, you know, have all this knowledge. We have all this knowledge about how the state works, about political economy, about, you know, history, what really happened. We're very learned people for the most part. I think a lot of us are very bright, very learned, and we really do want to see other people, you kind of reach our level of education. And that's really what we want is to bring everybody up to our level. You know, not saying that they're worthless human beings, you know, just because they're not libertarians, but they don't know things that we know. As simple as that. And we want them to understand and be able to empathize with our point of view. And it's good to, you know, get everybody together in one room and be able to say, you know, the state really screwed up X, and maybe it's something as mundane as they botched a construction project, or as bad as they raided somebody's home and killed an innocent person. And we want to be able to turn to our friends and family and be able to say, that's awful, and then nod in agreement and say, yeah, that's bad. It provides comfort for us. I think it provides a lot of security for us. And that's one of the beauties of the Free State Project, which is the idea of having a larger community of people that you can turn to and say, that's bad, and you guys, you agree with me, and they all nod and say yes. So everyone can kind of feel like, okay, at least I have people who have the similar moral leanings as me, have the similar, you know, values as me. So they're gonna, when they see something horrible like that, if it happens to me, they'll be outraged and come to bat for me.
Oh, approval is a beneficial thing for a lot of people. A lot of people seek it, right? Whether it's just dressing the right way, being socially, having a successful social life, a lot of people like that sort of thing. As yeah, LDL in Reddit, chat is saying, you're always looking for your upvotes in Reddit. And so I guess to build on that metaphor, I maybe it would be more beneficial for me in particular, because I don't have that many voluntarists that I can just like, that I associate with outside of the internet. It would be beneficial to be in a place where, metaphorically speaking, people around me are going to upvote my comments.
Yeah, I agree with that. Definitely.
Man, I got to get up to the Free State Project. That's...
Yeah. No, I mean, I really can't agree with it more. It's a great idea.
Like, psychologically speaking, maybe that would be really healthy.
Either that or Adam Kokesh's house. Those are your two options.
Oh, dude, Kokesh is actually near me anyway.
Adam Tokesh's?
Tokesh, whoa!
Hey-o!
Kokesh?
He must be an ant.
I think so.
Yeah. So I guess the last thing I wanted to bring up before maybe we get into like suggestions for solutions other than the Free State Project, and the sort of that broad thing I mentioned earlier, that largely one of my goals in life is to create sort of a network of relationships for myself that are completely voluntary. I guess my own little personal bubble of voluntary relationships and voluntarism. But ultimately, Do you guys have any thoughts on just sort of dealing with, not maybe I shouldn't say failure, but slow progress towards that goal?
I mean, I usually say to myself, I'm a big, strong anarchist who don't need no state or something. I don't know. I struggle with this a lot. I really do.
So,
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I just want to clarify that I know what you're talking about, Toast. I think I do. Talking about how you can kind of come to fruition, to flourish as an individual and to build those networks, which may or may not be independent to people in the liberty movement. It certainly helps at times to think eye to eye there. Certainly a lot of bright people, like Eternal was saying. But yeah, I mean, that's really fun for me to step away and know that I have the ability to learn all these things to kind of get to the top of the mountain, in a way to speak. I mean, the people in this community, you know, whether or not you get tired of them from time to time, or if it's been long enough for you to do that, I mean, I think it's fair to say that they're just brilliant people. And if I want to ignore the news and kind of see what else is out there, and even if I'm not straying from Reddit, Toast, you mentioned, you know, learning about, you know, fashion or communicating or networks of friends. You go over to our MFA or our male fashion advice. I've read stuff there, and I think that's the only subreddit where learning the ropes is more complicated than our anarcho-capitalism. I mean, there's just so many rules.
Male fascist advice.
That would be. I hope that would exist, actually. Yeah, but to learn how things fit or whatever, and you know, clothing fits just the right way, and blah blah blah, and it's so overly tedious. But I mean, trying some of those things on, I mean, it's less abstract, it's less intellectual in a way. But you go out there, and people seem to respect someone who, you know, someone's opinions, not based on the logic they use, unfortunately, you know, regardless of how much logic and research we put into it, but they kind of trust those things based on who's saying it or how confident or how, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Able to interact with the world, the person who's you know, producing those words.
And I guess you compound that with sort of the level of nerdiness that often presents itself in the liberty community, right?
I just got to say, thank God we have Pendulette, because otherwise we'd be doomed.
Someone with showmanship? Yeah, absolutely. I remember a specific comment from Throw Ahoy Matey. I think we're yet to have him on to discuss with us, but I can just see him at his internet, at his keyboard, kind of double Picard facepalming, saying, you know, these liberty people have got to stop wearing jean shorts. Where do they get this idea? Head over to our male fashion advice. And I'm like, that's probably true. You see those videos of the Free State Project, and it's, you know, there's people that could use a fashion tip or two.
I don't know. I think it's also a generational thing. The older libertarians are a different breed of libertarian. Like, have you noticed that? Like,
oh yeah,
the older guys are kind of quaint and quirky and a little. They're very offbeat. The younger crowd is just people. They're just dudes and gals too. I mean,
feel that generational divide in things that aren't liberty anyway. That I have trouble relating to most people that are sort of the age that would have been politically active in the 70s when the Libertarian Party came about. It's my own personal experience that I don't know that it's just unique to libertarianism itself. But yeah, I mean, like, yet another divide between people.
So I guess I wanted to add in my two cents to before we move on to some of the solutions. I know wrong opinion wrote out a nice list of advice that I do want to get to and I want to share with everybody. But before we get there, I wanted to talk about a different flavor of burnout that I personally have, and I don't know how many of you guys have it as well, and maybe some of our listeners have experienced it, which is the type of burnout where it's not, oh man, I'm not reaching people. It's nothing to do with converting people or whatever you want to call it, you know, arguments and all that. It has to do with being able to do with your life what you want to do and being able to seize opportunities. Because I have this problem where I come up with ideas. You know, I guess I could consider myself a bit of an entrepreneur, inventor type person. That's what I want to do with myself eventually. And a lot of us, I think, have those leanings. And we look at things and we see opportunities to improve other people's lives through, you know, voluntary interactions with the market, do good things. and then you see, oh, what this, but the state's, you know, in the way. You know, I'd have to go and do this particular thing, get these licenses, or, you know, cost hundreds of thousands of dollars of capital to do this, which I can't raise because, well, I need to have a particular type of facility or equipment or licensing. Or it's really hard to go out there and change things for the better, not just in the political sphere and the philosophical sphere, but in just any sphere, because the state has this clause in everything. And it's very disheartening when you see that and you're like, ugh, I could do so many good things, but government.
If the cage is so very small and it's fashioned in such a way as to make it hard to change the shape of the cage, yes?
Well, I mean, this is the way the system's designed, is to protect, you know, organizations from competition. It's all regulatory capture. It's all about, you know, promoting the interests of big business and crushing the little guy and keeping new technologies and new ideas from emerging. Yeah, it's all designed this way. I mean, it's nothing surprising to anybody.
Yeah.
But it's still, it's frustrating. It's,
I mean,
very
people go gold. I mean, I guess I'm not one of them. I don't know anybody in particular who has, but as we always say, that people are strongly incentivized to just give up, get burnt out, as in the exact way that you're describing, right?
Well, going galled, I think, is another... The problem with that is...
Can you explain the term? I know it's a random
term.
Yeah,
so going galled being in Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged, one of the main characters, John Galt, is guy who goes around finding, like, good, successful entrepreneurs, honest, hardworking capitalists and stuff, and pulls them, you know, convinces them to retire and just retreat and just not do anything anymore. And just because, you know, they're basically being, I guess, milked for all their talent and ability and everything. And
so the metaphor isn't perfect, because I guess in the story, John Galt was convincing them with sort of these moral arguments. Probably ought to separate themselves.
Oh, I was going to say something even better than that. It has nothing to do with it. The moral arguments or not, it doesn't matter. I was going to say John Galt managed to do it just because he could hide away with his, you know, Mirage shield and his fancy, you know, static electricity generator thing. He had technology that nobody else had, and that was his
Obama phone.
I guess ace in the hole.
Sorry.
That's really what it was, though, is he had access to things that other people didn't, and he was able to, and he said, you know, I'm going to withhold that from society at large, or withhold it from the state, and only share it with the people I think are morally worth sharing it with, you know, who are worthwhile people. And that's not such a bad thing. Like, I think it's a great model for the way things should work, because I honestly believe that if we put our heads to it, libertarians and voluntarists, we can really come up with some great ways to improve the world. We're smart people, educated people, we're a lot of engineers, and I think we already do that quite a bit. But the problem is, it's so hard to keep it out, you know, keep it to ourselves and keep it to our own community. And that's something we might want to foster, is some, maybe phase two of the Free State Project or something, is, you know, foster some technology development or something and try to keep it out of the hands of... Oh, actually, it reminds me of something. It was Elon Musk, the guy, you know, co-founder of PayPal with Peter Thiel, SpaceX guy. I remember an interview he gave. This is a bit of a tangent, but I remember an interview he gave where he has this new process for designing rockets and building rockets. The traditional way is really wasteful. It wastes like 90% of the metal. The new way he has only wastes like 10% or something. It's way more efficient. It's way cheaper. And he intentionally did not patent it because he didn't want the blueprints to be out there for anybody to copy. So he can talk about it, but nobody really knows how it's done. So in a sense, he's done that, the go galt thing. He's kept important information, you know, for other people. He's kept his own inventions to himself. And maybe that's something we need to do. I don't know.
And who is this again, Eternal?
Well, it's not trades. Niren's in this is Elon Musk.
Right.
You can look, yeah. But Niren's in chat, and he's talking about, you know, trade secrets aren't exactly going galt, but they kind of are in a way. I mean, I think they kind of are.
Well, it's working outside the system. So Eternal, when you become a radical, brilliant inventor type, and
hold on, I'm not claiming to be any of those things.
Yet.
I'm just claiming to be, you know, guy with his head in the cloud, maybe.
You know, it's interesting. I've noticed, I don't know how closely this wraps in. It just seems like a lot of those people who would normally be successful, but then, I guess, go galt, that is, lose their motivation because of how grinding regulations and such are, they seem to get some motivation or joy out of just a collapse in society coming. I mean, you see this all over the place, I guess, like, you hear, I was listening to Stefan Molyneux's Sunday show just recently, and somebody mentions that, with complete firm certainty, that there is going to be a social collapse, I guess because of how men are being treated and, like, marriage settlements and such, and how they're very much incentivized to, like, not get married and whatever. And this guy had absolute certainty, like, yes, there is very soon going to be a crash. And it was... And he was just really clearly happy about that. Maybe that's a solution for a lot of people. I mean, that's not something that I personally feel, but...
people get vindication out of being right. Some of them.
And maybe even just, like, this sort of karma aspect to it. That, like, oh, man, after so many years of these people supporting a system that was ultimately unsustainable, that it's finally coming back to haunt them.
I thought you were going to go a different direction at the start of this.
Oh, because I said
after
karma.
After so many years of sleeping, I have awoken to take over the world. The beginning of Power Rangers.
Oh, sorry. That went right past me. Sorry.
You didn't watch Power Rangers?
Not as a kid. Nope.
Oh, my God.
I saw a little bit. I'm better with the Simpsons Rondos. References, though, you had.
I expected, because I used the word karma, that you're going to make a Reddit joke.
I see what you did, Dar.
Yeah. Do you want to get into some of our cast's proposed solutions?
Yeah, let's talk about these things on WO's list that he's shared with us. So go ahead.
Let's solve burnout. So one thing that Rong said, he says you don't need to get burned out. I mean, not everyone, or probably no one even, can breathe academic or activist content 24/7. I know we're kind of fixated on it. It's kind of like, you grab your popcorn and it's like politics or sports or soap operas to a degree. It's like crack for your brain. But, I mean, to be like Jeffrey Tucker, Molyneux, or people who are kind of constantly in the thick of it, it takes a special kind of person. And I think that's fair to say. And there's no shame in taking a break from time to time and indulging yourself in other pursuits. I mean, you have to, like Toast was saying, you want to improve your own life. You want to build a network around yourself. That's probably honestly what's most important. I mean, you are not responsible, or at least I feel this way sometimes, and this is what helps me, is knowing that, I don't have to be responsible for the movement. It's not on my shoulders. It's there if I want to get something out of it. And, I engage in it because I feel it improves my life. It gives me a more clear, level-headed way of thinking. And I don't feel bogged down by just trying to, like, make sense of, people being handcuffed by cops and bullied and stuff like that. I mean, you run into enough stuff a day that it just has its own intrinsic reward to kind of make sense of things.
Yeah, so, I've even had experiences where I take a break from something academic or very difficult, or like, example is like how good I am at the game of chess. Like, sometimes I just take a break for like a year and a half and I come back and I'm just like better somehow, just because I've let the ideas settle, sort of cement themselves in long-term memory, just find the right patterns and whatever. It could be that even after a break, you're just better at the whole communication thing. Like, maybe there's this tremendous success ahead and you just need that break to just refresh yourself on it so you can be in top shape for that time that you're actually going to convert somebody when that opportunity arises.
I was gonna add to that. I feel like there's a process that most of our brains go through. I know we're all different. They do work in different ways, but I feel like there is a process whereby we have a lot of experiences. We go in and focus on actions in the present, and we do need to pull back. Ignore it and let like some background processes run and reorganize the way we do things and just let it cement. I agree that that's a really good way to put it. And then we can go out there and feel refreshed and anew, and there's no it's like everything just makes more sense. It's more natural when you come back to it. So
yeah, sure.
Yeah, breaks are good. Breaks are good. I want to move on number two here. I want to move on to number two. Writes, it's important to triage properly. Most people are simply not going to be convinced by you, and chances are you were not convinced to the libertarian position by someone else arguing with you. You were curious and sought sources of information. Be a source of information for curious people. Debates are useful tools, but only for specific purposes. You aren't convincing the interlocutor of anything. You are demonstrating the logical soundness of your position to the audience, and this is especially important for people who post on Reddit or post in any public forum or talk in any sort of public debate. Your goal is never to convince the person you're talking to, and I can't agree with this more. Like, you are arguing for the sake of everybody else, and very, very rarely will you ever encounter somebody who you can argue with them, and they're going to be convinced by your argument.
So set expectations properly, right? It's about, you know, we have our long-term goals. That one that I've kept coming back to tonight, that you want to create this like personal bubble for yourself full of volunteerism and good relationships with other people, including the ones that are forced upon you by government or whatever. But there are going to be intermittent goals along the way. And I guess it's probably important to set proper expectations that if you go into the if you go into an argument on Reddit, expecting that the person you're shouting words at is going to be convinced, you're probably going to be disappointed. And that's something you want to avoid. That negatively affects motivation, for sure.
Yeah, setting goals appropriately. Absolutely. I mean, and my kind of take on the same thing would be that even that is kind of specifically tailored. That number, point number two, the wrong said, it's awesome for people that are logical. And, you know, if you set them on the right path, they'll probably, you know, quote unquote, right path, they'll get there. You know, they'll make sense. They'll feed on logic. But I'm also aware that there's people that are not going to apply logic. There is no logical argument, and that's fine too. I mean, I don't need to hate or loathe someone just because they don't, you know, think the same way I do or aren't going to be disciplined in that way. I mean, people do things. People have value. They have artistic eyes and et cetera, et cetera. There's all kinds of traits that make people valuable and interesting and reasons I'd want them to be a part of my life.
Oh, sure. And something that I get a lot out of is just trying to understand people. Like even people that do things that are maybe devaluing to me, as I mentioned earlier in the show, I guess it's peaceful for me to understand where that's coming from, I guess. Just understanding it, not immediately getting angry at it's probably beneficial. Keeps your blood pressure a bit lower, right?
That's a good thing.
And there's not many libertarians, so we need to stay healthy so we don't all die out.
Yeah, that would be a bad way to go for the movement.
Yeah, just explode. Blood pressure goes to like 10,000 PSI. You just combust.
Yeah, stay alive. Just get kidney stones or something.
Yeah. You know, Rung's last piece of advice was probably, it's a bit cliche, I guess, but he told us to be the changes that we want to see around us.
I am libertarian, you can too.
Yeah. What was that? Is that like Colbert's book?
I think something like that.
Something like that.
That's such a good one. Yeah. I'm sure that was totally ghostwritten, but that was still a great title.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'm America and So Can You by Stephen
Colbert. That's it, right.
Colbert.
Oh, man, back when I was a statist, that was a really funny book.
Probably still is in a lot of ways, but
maybe I'll have to find it. I'll have to dig it out.
He's still a funny guy.
Yeah, now it just adds to your burnout.
I was just going to expand on this a little bit. It's, you know, basically just be responsible for yourself. Like, try not to be a burden for other people. I know that's kind of a conservative point to take, but I think it's also a libertarian point to take, which is if you're going to preach individualism, if you're going to preach the ideas of, you know, being able to do what you want to do, actually be able to, you know, handle yourself and take care of yourself, be responsible. It's not that hard.
Well, you're selling a lifestyle. Yeah, I think everybody has like this friend, and like bad interactions with people just seem to follow that person around, right? It could be anything. Like maybe it's that girl that you're friends with that just has a bad boyfriend 6-7 times a year or whatever. And you just notice that all of these conflicts just seem to pop up around that person. And what's your reaction to that person? Well, I don't want to be that person, right? I don't want conflict going on around me. And I think maybe it's instructive to don't turn yourself into that liberty guy who goes around and creates conflict around with everybody else around you because they voted
I remember
you're selling a lifestyle, right?
It was Mark on Free Talk Live was talking about this a while back, and remember specifically bring up the complaint that a lot of activists seem to seek out and create controversy and conflict and drama, and it turns people off, actually. Called it poisoning the well. And I think that's something that he has a really strong point on, which is that we need to focus and not be drama queens. We really need to focus on just living our lives as best we can. And when bad things do happen, then we can go and flock to them and point them out. But we don't need to seek out creating trouble. And I think that doesn't help spread things.
Right. Like, look how happy and healthy and wealthy and wise token voluntarist is, right? Like, man, I could have that lifestyle too if I just create voluntary relationships around myself, and maybe they'll read up about the philosophy a little bit, and then they're down the rabbit hole.
Well, I think it's most important also to be tolerant Not in the terms of the PC liberal sense, but just really, you know, if you're going to be around people, just be nice to people and be tolerant of their different things. It's not, I think libertarians do this naturally anyway, but we need to be go out of our way to make sure that we make sure people feel comfortable having different opinions and different values. And as long as you're not advocating violence, I mean, who cares what you think or what you advocate? It doesn't really matter. It just doesn't matter. So, you know, just make sure people are comfortable discussing that with you and being open with that and feeling good that they have those positions, even if they're not positions we personally have.
I mean, volunteerism should be about acceptance in general, right? That, like, you don't, at a fundamental level, it's like reducing the level of jerkiness that you have in your relationships.
Don't be a dick.
Yeah, don't be a dick. Seriously, like, I know it is, it's the internet, it's gonna happen. You see it a lot. We want to be, I guess, nice guys. And what Aniran was saying in chat is that being polite in these conversations is going to get people to be more responsive anyway.
But Aniran also said, be a dick to dicks, because they like that. Now I'm putting a word in his mouth. Don't try to read for it.
Don't do that either.
Yeah. Hey, Eternal, you said you had something to mention after
I had one more thing to mention, which is I think as voluntarists, you know, when you get frustrated with spreading the message, when the liberty movement doesn't seem to be doing it for you guys in general, focus on honing your own skills. Make yourself more valuable as a person in some way. Just, you know, focus on, you know, your own human capital, making money, furthering your careers, improving your family or something. Something like that. Because those things do spread libertarianism, whether you realize, and do help people, whether you realize it or not. If you're doing something to make money in the free market, you are by definition helping other people. I mean, that's what economics says. You know, just mutually beneficial exchange. You're providing things for other people, so that's a great thing. And money is good. Money
and that's
is very good.
And that's the way to achieve Toast's goal of building your network and creating a life for yourself. Is you know another way to say it is you create more value than you pull out. You're net positive.
And also to expand on that, I mean, we want to be good at what we do. Libertarians really need to be the leaders in this world. I think that's going to be the key, because honestly, we can be as amazing arguers and as nice people as we want, but we need to have some level of exposure. You know, like, this is why Ron Paul was so good, is because he was a great guy who, compared to all the other assholes in Congress, looks like, I mean, he's a freaking saint. He just, like, completely stands out among the crowd of, you know, Satan worshipers that are out there. And it's such a contrast that people are drawn to it as, wow, this guy's totally different. And we need to be those guys. We need to be the guys who are totally different, to be, you know, rich and, you know, captains of industry or advocates of
beacons
causes.
Of freedom.
Beacons of freedom. We really do. We need to be beacons of freedom in whatever we choose to be, and be really good at things. And so the people look at us and like, wait a minute, this guy is, he's a cool guy. I mean, he's advocating that I can pursue whatever ends I want, and he will stick up for that. And that's a great thing. And everybody can, I mean, almost everybody's going to be able to say that, which is that this guy is going to come to bat for me, you know, to allow me to pursue whatever ends I want, because that's what our position is let people do what they want.
Yeah. Well, this was really helpful for me. And yeah, for anybody who listens, I hope it was great for you too. I mean, I wish everybody great luck. Don't get burnt out. It's a bad rut to be in. So, yeah.
So, yeah, I agree. That was helpful for me too. And let's do it. It's about 2300 Eastern Standard Time and 2000 Pacific Time. I think that's how you say it. So, put Obama in president, you know. He gave us a phone. He's going to do more.
What about Romney?
He sucks.
He sucks. Yeah. You can choose to decline to state as well, as we continue to feel all the feels on either declinefm.com or decline to state on iTunes, and of course also Reddit. I would like to remind you that Decline to State is still brought to you free of charge, as well as paid advertisement free, and a big thanks to all of our hosts, tech experts, researchers, contributors, and our listeners, and all you folk who still choose freedom over slavery despite the extra hassle. Decline to State is a group effort motivated by our love of liberty, as well as capitalist bow ties and free market models. Remember, when asked, always decline to state. This is Ronald McPaul saying, you've gotten to the correct answer, now what?
This is Eternal. Hope you enjoyed the show, guys. Have a good night.
And this is Toasty Time.
Have a good night, everyone. We'll be right back.